Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Diane Bostel-Smith. My registration number is 14340, and I'm appearing today on behalf of the plaintiffs. On August 15, 2010, Tabor Duncan, a beautiful little 9-year-old girl who had been successfully racing karts for several years, died on the Grand Junction Motor Speedway during a race sponsored by the Colorado Junior Karting Club when the rescue vehicle pulled out right in front of her with no time for her to avoid it. She died because the defendants recklessly failed to take even the most basic steps to make sure that she was safe, all the while knowing that she or another child could be killed if they didn't. In fact, Stacy Cook, the manager of 29ers, publicly stated in 2002 that a rescue vehicle on a hot track was incredibly dangerous, but he did nothing about that when he ran his own track. Your Honors, this case is not about defendants' negligence or the releases that were argued at the trial court. Those are irrelevant to this appeal, except as part of the background. This is all about the claims for recklessness where liability cannot be released. Here, once Judge Kachet dismissed the negligence claims because of the releases, he simply stopped analyzing. In his 13-page single-spaced opinion, he spent 4 paragraphs on these claims. He struck the expert opinions using the wrong legal standards, and he didn't look at the admissible evidence that was in the record.
How do you know that?
Because, Your Honor, when you look through his analysis, what he says is the expert reports are inadmissible and conclusory. And then he says that at best the experts establish negligence, and then he dismisses the claims.
There is absolute counsel that he did look at them to see what they established. Aside from the words willful and wanton and reckless, it appears that he disregarded those words and then reviewed the remainder of the reports. Would you agree with that?
I would not agree with that, Your Honor. I think the thing that he focused on was the fact that he had already granted the dismissals for the releases once he struck the expert opinions because of those words. He says, well, at best, the experts have talked about negligence. Negligence won't support willful and wanton, and then he dismissed the claims. I don't think he spent the time to analyze the facts that underlie the expert opinions, when you look at the quantum of evidence that we had already put in the record.
Well, regardless of whether he did or not, we certainly have.
Absolutely.
And we've looked at all the factual information that you submitted. And aside from the words, recklessness, etc., in the expert opinions, help me understand how the factual information that you have had leads to the conclusion that the willful and wanton statute has been met.
The standard that we believe that has been met, Your Honor, is the recklessness portion of the willful and wanton standard. And if you look at this court's decision in the White case at 837 P. 2nd 1233, recklessness is defined as such a gross want of care and disregard for the rights of others as to justify the presumption of willfulness and wantonness. So the beginning place in this case is the rules of the International Karting Federation, which state, no person, race official, or other shall be permitted on the racing surface at any time during a race. That regulation is made applicable to practices as well as actual races. And although IKF sells itself as the sanctioning body for kart racing, it never did anything to ensure that those rules were being enforced, ever. And Jay Jacobellis, who was the IKF regional coordinator, who had to certify compliance with the rules, pushed this race forward knowing that it was not safe and knowing that a child could die. At the Grand Junction Motor Speedway, Richard Talley had driven the rescue vehicle on a hot track for at least 10 years prior to Tabor's death. Your Honor, I would submit that's not evidence of safety, that's just sheer dumb luck. He did so because that's how he had been trained by both Stacy Cook, the day-to-day manager of 29ers, as well as Darren Cook, a member of the LLC. Stacy Cook also drove a rescue vehicle on a hot track during that time. That whole time he knew that a rescue vehicle on a hot track was incredibly dangerous. He had taken that position in public on a public karting forum in 2002.
Could I interrupt for just a second? I'm trying to get understand the relationship between some of these parties here. So we have Mr. who was driving the car, Mr. Talley?
Mr. Talley was driving the car.
And his employer is the 29ers. Okay. And so how do they relate to the Grand Junction Motor Speedway Kart Club and who the Cooks work for?
Okay. 29ers is the name of the official name of the LLC. They operated as the Grand Junction Motor Speedway. Stacy Cook was a member and a managing director of 29ers LLC. Darren Cook was his brother. He was a member but not a manager of the LLC. Richard Talley was a regular employee of the 29ers, but apparently on the day of this particular race, he was being compensated by CJKC, the Colorado Junior Karting Club, pursuant to the contract by which CJKC was using the Grand Junction Motor Speedway for purposes of this race. This was actually both the 29ers and the CJKC were using the track the day of the race.
And the trial judge, Judge Gachette, said the case can continue with respect to Talley and the 29ers, correct?
Correct. Even though about 3 months before he granted the summary judgment, he had said that we could amend our complaint to assert claims for willful or for exemplary damages against CJKC and Stacy Cook. But that same evidence, even though it made a prima facie case to go to the jury on exemplary damages, that evidence was insufficient to make a liability claim for the same quantum of conduct, willful and wanton, by the time it got to summary judgment.
Thank you.
As long as we're at a stopping point, let me ask you this question. I just want to clarify. You're not asserting any claims in this appeal against Mr. Talley and the 29ers, are you? Because summary judgment was not granted on their behalf. You listed them on the caption. I just want to clarify that you're not asserting any claims in this appeal against them.
No, Your Honor, we're not. The claims are still pending against them in the trial court and have been stayed pursuant to the judge's 54B order.
All right. So to the extent they've been included in the caption, that was an error.
Okay. I never know when people are supposed to be included or denied in the caption based on the trial court record.
Strike the word error.
Okay.
I'm not accusing you of anything.
If you did, I take it, Your Honor. I'm the one at the podium. For the August 2010 race, KJKC rented the track and sponsored the race where Tabor was killed. They were responsible for safety on the track, including enforcement of the IKF rules. Jay Jacobellis, the vice president of CJKC and the IKF regional coordinator, had seen Mr. Talley drive the rescue vehicle on a hot track prior to this race. On the day of the race, in spite of that knowledge, he did nothing to make sure that it didn't happen again, preferring to push for the race to start. Scott Hannum, the president of CJKC, said that 29ers and the CJKC jointly had the obligation to run the race, and said that it is not their practice to allow a recovery vehicle on the hot track, but did nothing to stop that from happening either. On the day of the race, the flaggers didn't show up. They're the ones who are on the corners waving their flags to make sure that the race is proceeding safely. The grid steward didn't show up. He's the person who controls the entering or exiting of the kart racers in order to make sure that it's done safely.
That all sounds like it might be negligence, but how do we get to that it's all but intentional conduct, which the White case talks about?
Your Honor, here's the way I think about it. If I'm driving along in my car, and I fail to see that a light is red, and I blow the intersection and I cause a car accident, that's simple negligence. That's pretty easy. If I'm driving along and I'm texting and I'm speeding and I'm looking everywhere but where I'm supposed to, and I blow that red light and I cause an accident in the intersection, that's recklessness. That's a gross disregard for the rights of others. And when you look at the conduct of all of these players together, and they're all jointly and severally responsible, that conduct constitutes recklessness.
Well, let's see if I can dig into that a little bit. As I understand it, the trial court judge did not deny the claims. It did not grant summary judgment with regard to the claims against Mr. Talley or the 29ers.
Correct.
So in order to establish the willful and wanton conduct with regard to the other defendants,
it would be easy if, say, one of them had seen Tabor coming in her cart and told Mr. Talley, go ahead out onto the track.
That'd be simple.
That'd be simple. Help me figure out how we get from where you are to between there and where I just was.
Every single one of them failed. Mr. Jacobellis knew that this was the practice of the track. He did nothing. Mr. Hamm said it was the club practice not to have the rescue vehicle on the track. He did nothing. Mr. Leatherman, the man who was ultimately responsible for ensuring the safety of the children involved in this racing, making sure that they didn't die, did nothing. He didn't communicate the safety rules. He didn't communicate with the workers on the track. He didn't even know Richard Talley was on the track. He had no idea who was doing all of these things on the day of the race, and was they abdicated every single standard.
So how do we get from there to all but intentional?
Well, Your Honor, at some point, and this is a question for the court to decide, at some point, all of those negligent acts are going to pile up enough that conduct becomes reckless, and that's what we think happened in this case.
But what are they, acts or are they omissions, and does that make a difference?
I don't think it does make a difference whether it's an act or omission if you go back to the standard of recklessness. A gross want of care or regard for the rights of others. I'm not a Catholic, but I think that covers sins of omissions as well as commission.
One of the cases that's cited in, at least in the defendant's briefs, but I'm not sure it's cited in your brief, is the Hamill case, which has to do with horseback riding. I think it's the most recent published case, at least from this court, on this statute. Can you help me with what your position is with respect to the effect of that case on the issues that you're presenting to us?
I think Hamill is so different on the facts, Your Honor, that it doesn't really apply to that case. If you look back at the facts there, the I forget what they call him, the cowboy, the hand, whatever he was called, he repeatedly checked the girth strap on the saddle before the woman got on the horse, adjusted it after she got on the horse, adjusted it again yet a third time, I believe, when they were beginning the trail ride. And in that circumstance, he was actually facilitating safety as opposed to simply ignoring it. The fact was, is the horse bloated its belly while its girth was being adjusted, and then exhaled and the saddle slipped. That's not what happened here. I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. You've got a little over 2.5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Tom Bloomstrom, and along with Lori Bell, who's president at council table, I represent the appellee defendants, the International Kart Federation, the Colorado Junior Karting Club, Jay Jacobellis, Scott Hannum, and Mike Leatherman. Undoubtedly, this is a tragic case, and it's a tragic case that involves a tragic loss. But the accident that led to that loss was a confluence of disparate circumstances and acts, none of which rise to the level of gross negligence on behalf of any of my clients. There's been discussion during counsel's argument about White v. Hansen. The language in that case, as pointed out accurately by Judge Terry, is that the difference between ordinary negligence on the one hand and gross negligence, willful and wanton conduct, or recklessness on the other hand, is that the latter three categories involve conduct so aggravated as to be all but intentional. That opinion goes on to state that the difference between negligence and gross negligence is one of quality rather than degree. And in that regard, the plaintiff's arguments that you can couple one or two acts of negligence, add them together, or three acts of negligence in the case of the example of texting while speeding, couple them together and add up to gross negligence is incorrect because it's a qualitatively different kind of conduct than the failure to use reasonable care. In this case, the arguments offered by the plaintiffs in an attempt to blur this qualitative difference between gross negligence and ordinary negligence consists of a circular argument that goes as follows. All of the defendants knew that karting involved risks. all the defendants knew that safety rules are important, and the safety rules are there to increase safety. Therefore, if the defendants violated a safety rule or failed to act to ensure that everybody present complied with the safety rule, it follows that it's a reckless disregard of a known risk. Under that logic, if the court were to accept that logic, the court would have to include that every time a driver violates a rule of the road and causes an accident, then there's a tribal issue of fact on willful and wanton conduct and thus exemplary damages. After all, every driver knows that the rules of the road are there to promote safety. Every driver knows that if you violate a rule of the road, you may cause an accident. But it does not follow that by negligently deviating from a rule of the road, that you've met the standard for gross negligence and consciously undertaken the course of action involving known risks of a strong probability of injury.
So let me ask you a question about the two cooks again. I'm still a bit confused about them. So the trial judge says, okay, there's enough evidence to show a tribal fact for Mr. Talley and his employer, the 29ers, under a theory of respondeat superior. As I understand the briefs, the cooks are members of the 29ers is just the corporate form of, I'm not sure if it's the Motor Speedway or if it's the Karting Club, one of the two, but as I understand it, the two cooks are members and managers of that outfit. So why doesn't the court's ruling cover them as well? Be the same evidence, wouldn't it?
Well, I'll try to address that. The cooks are not my clients. And Mr. Schimberg may be in a better position to address it. But to explain the relationship, the Grand Junction Motor Speedway is owned and operated by an LLC entity known as 29ers. As Your Honor points out, the cooks are members or managers of that LLC. It's undisputed that Mr. Talley was an employee of that LLC. There's no evidence in the record that Mr. Talley was somehow an agent or employee of the International Kart Federation or the Colorado Junior Karting Club. The difference, to get to your point, I believe, would be that members and managers of LLCs are not, by that status alone, subject to liability for the acts or omissions of the LLC. And there may be a distinction in that regard.
Thank you.
Going back to the important distinction between gross negligence and negligence, a distinction that's qualitative in nature, the same could be true of any time that there's a failure to exercise reasonable care. Most people know that if you fail to exercise reasonable care, you increase the risks that somebody will be injured. But it does not follow that simply by failing to exercise reasonable care, disregarding known risks of a strong probability of injury. And as a result of that, the court should reject the circular argument that simply because safety rules exist and you know they're important and you know they're important for ensuring safety, any failure to abide by them is necessarily the conscious disregard of known facts, creating a strong probability of injury.
Well, excuse me, counsel, I'd like to just kind of dig into this a little bit. You heard me talk with your esteemed colleague about what would happen if one of the co-defendants, for example, had seen Tabor coming down the track and told Mr. Talley to go ahead and drive out anyway. Is there something along the continuum between that and what happened here that creates a reckless would create liability for those additional defendants?
Well, certainly I think if there were evidence that Mr. Talley had been involved in accidents or had even had any close call of being involved in an accident. But that's not the case here. Here it's undisputed, plaintiffs admitted it in the trial court, that during his 10 years of conducting this activity, Mr. Talley has never been involved in an accident. He's never even been involved in a close call of having an accident. It's further undisputed that there was no evidence in the trial court that this sort of accident had ever occurred previously. And so to go from that evidence...
At this speedway or at all?
At all. No evidence anywhere in the country. And that gets to really the circumstances of this accident. Plaintiffs alternatively throughout the briefs describe it as confusion, disarray, incompetence on the part of a number of people who they claim are all willful and wanton, from the parents of children who were on the track at the time and who happened to be part of the Colorado Junior Karting Club, to Mr. Weatherman, to a sanctioning body, the International Kart Federation, who simply provides primarily point scoring systems for competition, but also safety regulations.
Well, let's talk about that for a little bit. Because apparently there is a rule, regulation, whatever you call it, of the Federation, which says nobody else out on the track. So with that there, I mean, what effect does that have on this case? What, I mean, is it just there for people to look at? Is there any training that the Federation puts on? Is there any kind of supervision when there's a race that somebody from the International Kart Federation is supervising what goes on? I mean, what's the impact or legal effect of that rule, which apparently is something that the Federation itself adopted?
Well, the impact of the rule is it's a rule that's designed to increase safety. I think, frankly, for a sanctioning body to require that they actively monitor full compliance with their rules at all time is not realistic in this context. I don't think the International Kart Federation is proximate enough to what happened at this track, something that's never happened before, that they could be held responsible, not just negligent. Sure, you might argue, in retrospect, they should have done more to enforce these rules. They should have done more to ensure that everybody complied with rules. But if the statutory immunity provided by 1322.107 is limited to those instances when you comply with all the rules and do everything correctly, it's illusory. And so I see that I'm running short on time, so I just would like to point out that there's no evidence in the record that any of my clients knew that Mr. Talley was going to enter the track. No evidence in the record that any of my clients instructed Mr. Talley to enter the track. And based on that, there's no evidence in the record that support gross negligence claims against any of my clients. And on behalf of my clients, I ask that you affirm the trial court's entry of summary judgment in their favor. Thank you.
Are you splitting time?
Yes.
Are the defendants splitting time?
Oh, okay. Sure.
May it please the court, good afternoon. I'm Tim Schoenberg, Fowler, Schoenberg & Flanagan, 10686. And I do represent Stacy Cook and Darren Cook, as well as 29ers and Mr. Talley. There is a slight difference, Your Honor. I think Judge Loeb, the Stacy Cook and Darren Cook, let's see if I can help that out.
Thank you.
Darren Cook, on the day of this accident, was an announcer. He was outside the building facility, part of the facility at Grand Junction Motor Speedway. And what he volunteered to do was to, what they call the racers to the grid. So there's families and kids and participants in the pit area. And it's as simple as following the race schedule. So he is asked by Colorado Junior Karting Club officials if he would start announcing that the kids should get ready to come to the grid area. That he did. He started with the kid kart novices at 8 o'clock. He then announced 10 minutes later, all tags. These are different classifications of the karts. And then lastly, JR or Junior One novice. and that's the group that Tager Duncan and other children were participants. It's a simple announcing that people need to get ready to go to the grid. It is not an announcement. You can't go out on the track. It's not a release to go out on the track. It is simply pre-race preparation. Then you go to this grid area where the kids or the participants are staged. They're put in two columns and then finally released. Mr. Darren Cook had absolutely nothing to do with that. Stacy Cook is also a member of the LLC. I think one of the things that has to be mentioned here, that the remaining claim against 29ers is simply and solely based upon respondeat superior, the conduct of Mr. Talley. So it's not based upon the conduct of Darren Cook or for Stacy Cook for that matter. Now, the Grand Junction Motor Speedway is simply a facility that was used and rented by my friends at the Colorado Junior Karting Club for this particular event. Colorado Junior Karting Club is an association of volunteers and family members that see value in the recreational pursuits such as karting.
And that's not one of your clients, correct?
That is not one of my clients. That's Mr. Blomstrom and Ms. Bell. They don't have a track. So for their racing season, they rent tracks, usually on the front range here, everything from Pikes Peak all the way up to IMI, which is up north. And once a year, they come over to Grand Junction Motor Speedway. And in fact, the Duncans came over and enjoyed weekends in the 2 years previous. My clients are not members of the IKF to this day. So, it's not their rules and regulations. It's Colorado Junior Karting Club's event for the weekend, or at least for the day of the racing. Now, what's important here is, I think there is a slight issue on who was Mr. Talley's master on this day, and it is not undisputed. However, I'm not sure it makes any difference for purposes of today. Mr. Talley was never told what to do, where to do it. He simply let his experience kick in, and his experience is that he operates a rescue vehicle, and when he sees young persons in carts that have engine trouble and breakdown, have accidents, or go off the track for 10 years without incident, he has done so. There is an IKF regulation, Your Honor. If there's anything undisputed, it is nationally, it was, if not a standard of practice, very common and typical. Stacy Cook is a person of some national reputation in both motocross and karting. He goes to national and world events. He has seen this phenomenon occur over and over and over. So, it's not his race on the day in question. He doesn't know that the race director has not provided instruction to Mr. Talley. And I notice my time is up.
Your time is up, counsel.
I sure would like 30 more seconds, but I understand.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Smith, I've got a little over 2.5 minutes for any rebuttal you would like.
Thank you. That's a tall act to follow. First of all, let's go back for a second to the standards to be applied. If you look at the decision in the White case, specifically footnote 5 on page 1233, you will see that the court supplied the definition of recklessness, which I have been arguing about in this case previously. It is a subpart of willful and wanton negligence, and proof of recklessness gives rise to a presumption of willful and wanton conduct, which would be sufficient to defeat a motion for summary judgment if, in fact, the material facts are in dispute. Number two, as to Mr. Talley, Mr. Cook testified in the case below during deposition that, in fact, CJKC paid Mr. Talley compensation for the day of the race. That's in the record. I think it's page 1048 or page 1098. It is not and never has been the rule of law that as long as there was never an incident before, that you can't prove reckless conduct when an accident like or an event like this occurs. If you look at the combination of events that happened, whether singly or together, there are so many instances in which these defendants simply chose not to do what they knew what they were supposed to do. And known risk, look at their releases. We started out saying the releases were irrelevant. Well, they're certainly relevant to prove their level of knowledge. They knew that death was a risk that could be that could happen in this case if they didn't follow the rules. And the number of instances in which they did not follow the rules shows a reckless disregard for the death of this child. We ask you to reverse the judge's decision in this case and remand so that we can take it to trial. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your helpful arguments. And the case will stand submitted.